question is what we are supposed to gain from Parshas Zohar. It's true, there's a messianic aspect to it. When Melech HaMashiach comes, he'll have to destroy Amalek finally. That's true. But what is in the mitzvah for us? How does it impact us, this mitzvah? It's a question I want to explore. The Gemara on Yud Beis Amud Beis in Megillah tells us the following. Omar Rabba Rabba Chono, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that we find Ish Yehudi Hayom Shushan Abira Shmuel Mordechai ben Shimon ben Kish Ish Yemini, suggesting that he was from Shevet Binyamin, but we just said is Ish Yehudi. Omar of Nachman, Omar Rabba Rabba Chono, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Oviv Binyamin v'Imo Mihuna. He had a mixed lineage. His father was from Shevet Binyamin, and his mother was from Shevet Yehuda. Rabbon and Amri, Mishpocha is Mizgaro Zubazu. That, in fact, the different Shvotim vied for had to have an association with Mordechai. Mishpocha Yehuda Ameres, Ano Goron Misialed Mordechai. He said, I'm responsible that Mordechai is in the world. Why? To the Katli David the Shimi Ben Gera. David had a right to kill Shimi Ben Gera because he was a murdered by Malchus, but he didn't kill him. And Binyamin and Mordechai was a descendant of Shimon Ben Gera. So David says, listen, if I had enacted the full Einish that I had a right to, no Mordechai. So put it to my credit. Or Mishpachas Binyamin Omra Minorka Osi. Listen, he's from Shevet Binyamin. So let's get real. So it's on my cheshbon. Rabbi Omar, Knesset Yisrael Omra, the masses of the Jews, they had a different take on this story. A very decidedly different take. Leidach Gisa, and it wasn't a positive take. He says, Re'uma also the Yehudi, Umashilim the Yehudi, Yemini. So you see what this one was a Yehudi, what a Yehudi did for me, and the payback that I got from a Yemini, from someone. But also the Yehudi, the low Katli David the Shimi. Unfortunately, David didn't kill Shimi. And Mameila, yes, Yalad B'nai Mordechai. We have this Mordechai running around. The Miknebei Haman. This guy, whatever, doesn't have enough sense. It starts in with Haman. Mashilam the Yemine. And then if this wasn't enough, so in other words, so Mordechai came about, Mordechai is on David's cheshbon that I have Torah son. Now what's the other half of the Torah? The other half of the Torah is Haman. He's a Mashilim no Yemini, no Katle Shaul Agag. Then he didn't kill Agag, as we're going to read in this Shabbos of Torah. And one was this Yalad B'nai Haman, the Bitzar Li Yisrael. So there were two takes. There's one take that there are those who vied for the association with Mordechai. And they said, because David, in fact, didn't kill Shimei, that's why we have the source of having a Mordechai. And Binyamin said, he comes from my shape. But Knesset Yisrael Omra, the broad masses of the Jews, what did they say? Look at the troubles that we have, you know? From Yehudi, and from Shevet Yehuda, and from Shevet Binyamin. Shevet Yehuda could have made sure we don't have this Mordechai. And Shevet Binyamin should have made sure that we don't have Haman. Now this is really the context of the story of the Megillah. How do we view the characters in the Megillah? Okay, so Haman we know was the Rosh, fine. That's at least established that much. But how do we view Mordechai? Mordechai was this great and saintly person. Or should we compare Mordechai? The Brisker Rovers that Tzal once gave a moshel for something else, but the moshel is very apt here. He says there was a balagolo who was leading his horse and buggy through the snow. And he got stuck in the snow. He couldn't move. It just went into a snowbank and he couldn't get it out. So he started to freeze. So he climbed down from the horse and buggy. And he takes snow and he starts rubbing it on his hands. And he warmed his hands up. He says, Baruch Hashem, the Eibishter made snow. You know, take a step back. The snow is your problem. It's not the solution to the problem. So, where does Mordechai fit in? This Mordechai went, and he had to antagonize Haman. Who asked him to antagonize Haman? And because he antagonizes Haman, Haman comes forth and he wants to make gzeira against all the Jews. He would have been better off without this Mordechai, this Kanoi. You know. So David did us an avla by what he did. And these are the perspectives. And this was the average man in the street. If Chazal tell us Knesset Yisrael means the average Jew. This is what the average Jew thought. This Meshugah Mordechai is making trouble for us. You know, I once, when I was visiting my mother, Ale Shalom Kinasi, after I was married. So I was recently married, so I didn't want to leave my talis in shul. I didn't have a good place to leave it, whatever. I wasn't there normally. And so I didn't know what to do with it. So I decided that I'll wait until everybody else goes out. And I'll wear, there was no Erev there, and I'll wear the talis home. It was a time, it was a warmer weather. And I'll wear the talis home on top of my jacket, and I'll wear it home. So everyone went out. Everyone was gone from the Young Israel. They'd gone home. I was the last person, and I crossed Ralph Avenue. Crossing Ralph Avenue. And this is almost comical what happened. So there's an African-American woman standing next to me. And this guy pulls up at the light. A European guy, a non-from guy, and he starts yelling at me, Dima Shigaradi, Dima Shigaradi, you know. So the African American woman thought someone was cursing her. So I told her, no, he's not yelling at you, he's yelling at me. He says, do you know the guy? No. I said, but he hates himself, you know. That's, you know, so from his standpoint, you know, I was being too stridently Jewish. We have differing perspectives. And the Megillah, a lot of the Megillah is to sort out the differing perspectives that take place. In the first two chapters of the Megillah, we have the view of the practitioners, the practical people. From their standpoint, Mordechai shouldn't antagonize Haman. From their standpoint, Mordechai told them, the same Kanoi, he told them not to go to Sudas Achashverosh. Is he off his mind? Here we are, in the Golas, and under the best of circumstances, as the Gemara tells us, Akati Avdi Achashverosh, and on we're subjects. This is not a liberal democracy in which they live. So we're going to antagonize the king and not showing up. The king makes a big bash and we're not going to show up. In Mestavar, that's the pshat, there's a machloikis in the Gemara. What was the chet, which was Mechayev that door? So one view in the Gemara is that the chet was Shenenu Misudas Achashverosh. They partook of Sudas Achashverosh. That's one view in the Gemara. So one man, the other man, the Omer, asks on him that, no, he says, you've explained to me the Jews of Shushan, but why are the rest of the Jews culpable? So Yitochan, that the answer to this is, that everyone agreed. The Jews in Shushan may be the ones that had the opportunity, they were to come. But this was the consensus. The consensus of the people was Knesset Yisrael Amro. This is what the Jews, whether you lived in Kush or you lived in Shushan or in Hodu, it didn't make a difference. But the guys that were had it straight were the guys that were going to the Suda. They represented your view of what you want to take place. So we have in the Gemara, Machlekes, Shalu Tamido Ves Rav Yosha and Rav Beis Amar Ala Ves Rav Yosha Rav Shimon Ben Yoichai. They manas chayvu sonem she Yisrael shuva oisai hador kli. What was the chet? Omru lahem, imru atem, so you tell me. Omru lahem, they shenenu misidoso shalo yisai rosha. So that's what they told him. So he said back to them, Omru lahem, im kain. Im kain shabashushan yehorgu shabachol olam kulu al yehorgu. What was the culpability of all the rest of the Jews? Amado emarato. So okay, so let's see what you have to say. They said to him, Amado emneishi ishtachabu litzelem. They Haman made the symbol with the symbol of the cross and they bowed down to it. I'm sorry, not in Haman. Rather in Nebuchadnezzar, they bowed down to a cross, to a tzelem. Rosa, whatever the Avodah Zorah was. So Amr Lovitz, Avodah Zorah, Chimasa, Ponim, Yesh, Bedobin, and how did they escape? So Amr Lahem, that they were insincere in their worshipping of the Avodah Zorah, and therefore the Rebbeinu Shel Olam let them off. Now, you're talking that the Talmidim of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, their view was that the Jews were in agreement, Knesset Yisrael Amr. So, these are the ones that went, but everyone else was behind them. And everyone else was against Mordechai's view that they shouldn't go. Years go by, and everything is fine. Right? No, nothing happens. All of a sudden, it's 9 years later. And we have the rise of Haman. But they seem to have done quite well. They went to Suda Achashverosh, they placated him, and life went on, undisturbed. All of a sudden, Haman shows up on the scene. But right now he's prime minister. He doesn't have an agenda with the Jews yet. Along comes the same Mordechai, and what does he do? He comes up with another one of his canoistic stories. You know, he doesn't bow down to him. So, you know, 9 years ago he tried to do us in by telling us not to go to Suda Achashverosh. And Jewry told him to take a hike. We're going. And Baruch Hashem, we did well. You know, we're on good terms with Achashverosh. 9 years passed. All is well. Some Haman shows up on the scene. So instead of having the seichel to placate him, what does he do? He's out to antagonize. But this time, it's not dependent on us. This time, he goes and does the job himself. So, this is the perspective of Knesset Yisrael to the events that are in their lives. And yet, the initial view is what's correct. That mishpachos, that ultimately, Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin took pride that he came from them. That David didn't kill Shimei as the Milo. This really is the point of departure, I think, for the Megillah. There are many points of departure. I think there were differing levels of interpretation. And I don't want to go through them now, but the Gemara brings many, many psichtas, many, many introductions to the Megillah made by Viriyat Amoraim. And I think the pshat is each one is a method by which to understand the Megillah. It's a framework to put all the events in the Megillah in perspective. But it's not an obvious perspective. The obvious perspective was inconsistent with Mordechai. And yet, who triumphs at the end? Mordechai is the one that triumphs. And because of him, Klal Yisrael triumphs. He emerges at the beginning of the Megillah. He is too hot to touch. At the end of the Megillah is Rotzi L'Roi Vechov. Now, all the average Jews are behind him now. who's not so behind them? A little bit of the Sanhedrin, right? Things switched, right? Initially, the Sanhedrin supported him and the regular Jews were against him. When the story ends, all the regular Jews are behind them, and a little side, a minority of the Sanhedrin is raising their eyebrows at him. So, this is the study of the Megillah, the study of Purim, the study of Klal Yisrael and Golus. It's extremely difficult to discern what path we should take, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. And you know, when we look sometimes from the distance, we see it very differently. And yet we should not be haughty. If we lived in the same circumstances as they did, we wouldn't have seen it with our perspective. When we look back in retrospect at the beginning of the Megillah, the involvement in Sudas Achashverosh is astounding from one standpoint. What was the Suda about? What was he celebrating?
70 years.
Right? So he made a cheshbon like this. That he wrote his own Perish Anach. A Perish Anach. You know, listen, you don't have to be a religious person. There was a Yid here yesterday. His father came to see me. His father was a lifelong Yidid of Rav Yoshev. They sat together in the Bezdin, and it was one of the greatest Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael. And they tell me that when Ben Gurion was stuck in a pasuk in Tanakh, he used to call him up to ask him what's the pshat, you know. So Achashverosh also said pshat. So he said that Belshazzar made a mistake. Now, what was Belshazzar? Also took out the Kelim and the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because he made a cheshbon that the 70 years had passed and the Jews weren't redeemed. So we said it's obvious that the Jews are that sinful that they're not going to be redeemed. So Bovel has prevailed. So what happens? So that night, after the Suda, he goes out. And in a classical fail-safe operation, he is too drunk to properly give the password to his own guards. And who takes him out? His own security detail takes him out. They think he's an intruder coming to take the life of the king, and they finish him off. Too efficient. Now, if that would, and then after that, things swing away from Belshazzar in a different direction of who takes power. So now comes along Achashverosh. Now the prudent person would have said, listen, my predecessor Belshazzar messed over here. And he went down. You know, you come and you take a job. So they threw out the guy before you because he got involved in a certain type of trading, a certain type of deal, and it went down the wrong way. So they bring you in to take over. So you know, one thing you know is that type of deal you're never going to get near again. If that's what destroyed the guy before you, forget about it. You will have nothing to do with it, you know? And if anyone ever brings it up, you'll give them a piece of your mind. But you will never touch such a thing. So that would have been the prudent course of action. Along comes Achashverosh. And he decides, you know, the problem is that Belshazzar learned Rashi's pshat of the posik, but the real pshat of the posik is the Radak's pshat in the posik. And Ramayla, he started counting the 70 years wrong, so he made a new cheshbon of the 70 years. So he decided Bishna Sholosh Lamocha, the 70 years are completed. Oh, the 70 years are completed. The Jews are not redeemed. So what did he decide to do? Rather rash, so he decides also he's going to take out the Beit Kelim and the Beis HaMikdash and celebrate. What happened? What happened is that his pshat also wasn't the pshat. It was the Ramban's pshat that was the right pshat in the posik, and this pshat also didn't make it. So what happens? So tragedy ensues. So he winds up killing his wife Vashti. Now, so what would the celebration was? A celebration of the defeat of Klal Yisrael. That's what he was celebrating. That the victory over Yerushalayim now looks like it's going to be permanent. They're not going to rebound. from this. You know, he thought that he reached already Churban Bayis Sheni. That, you know, it's going to take millennia until the Jews get on their feet. It's not 70 years. So, the Shaila is, so what self-respecting Jew comes to such a happening? The whole point of the party was to celebrate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So how about you as a Jew coming to this party? When we look from the distance, we're astounded how it could have gone. But in the pressure of the moment, one can reach a very radically different decision. And not just on a few people. Knesset Yisrael, Klal Yisrael as a whole, held that they have to go to placate the king. We're in Golos, we're his subjects, we can't afford to antagonize him, too dangerous. And Ramayla, that's it. So this is beneath our dignity. What can we do? We have to swallow our pride and go out of here. So the Megillah is a call to see things with a different depth. To realize the superficial and the obvious is far from always being the answer. Sometimes it's a very wrong answer. And to the contrary, Mordechai was right two times over. He was right that there shouldn't be Nenemus who does Achashverosh. And secondly, he was right about not bowing down to Haman. That Haman adorned himself with an Avodah Zarah, and he said it's inappropriate, you've covered him. So, but this is not going to be known for years. First part is not going to be known for 9 years. The second is going to happen faster, but it's still going to take a while. And meanwhile, all the Klal Yisrael is going to be threatened. We're living under for why? Because this guy doesn't know how to get on. So the Megillah is a call to look at Jewish history with greater depth, not in a superficial sense. And maybe that's also in part, that's the message. That's the message of Parsha Zohar too. Parsha Zohar is a strange story. I'm talking the after of Parsha Zohar, a very strange story. We look the exchanges between Shmuel and Shaul HaMelech, and they seem almost to be playing the telephone game. You know, Shas has an expression of a guy comes and says, you owe me 100 bushels of wheat, and he says 30 bushels of barley, and then they ask you for barley. It's not to the point. The whole conversation between Shaul and Shmuel seems out of sync. He comes, and Shaul tells him, "Hakimaisi is Dvar Hashem. I fulfilled the words of the Rebbeinu Shalom." So, what does Shmuel answer? "Umeko latzayin. Then why do I hear all of these animals braying?" The Rebbeinu Shalom said to leave no zecher, of Amalek. So why are they here? So what does Shaul then go do? Shaul tells them that I saved them for a korban. So you admitted now that you did what the Rebbeinu Shalom didn't want you to do. And then Shaul tells them again, does the Rebbeinu Shalom want Karbonos or Mishmoy or Dvar Hashem? Does he want you to listen to the Rebbeinu Shalom? What does he want? Which is it that he wants? And Shaul still is not clear about it. Right, still. So he asked him why he doesn't fill the Rotzer Hashem, fulfill the Rotzer Hashem. So he tells him, I'm going to bring Karbonus. ויום ישמול החפץ לשם בעידוס לזבוכם בשמו יום הכל לשם נשמו יום מזבח טוב and then he finally tells him עשתו עשתו השם ויום עושך ממלך so what was the difficulty in this in what Shaul wanted what didn't Shaul realize first he told him Aki Moisi Yisdra Hashem So we told him, So we told him, Zvayach Lashem Elokecha. And he says, you didn't listen to the Rebbeinu Shalom. So Vayoyim Shol again, Asher Shomati B'Kol Hashem. Vayolech V'derech Asher Shlochani Hashem. V'Ovi Yisagag Melech HaMolek V'Samolek Haramti. So I brought back the tzoyin for a korban, and I brought back a gag to degrade him, which was the normal manner of victory in the warfare. And then finally, Shaul tells him that the Rebbe Hashem is not interested in your korbanos; he's interested in you should listen to him by your moschel b'malach. Shaul. Made an assumption, a very human assumption, but that assumption is assuming that I appropriately understand all the factors involved. Shaul's assumption was that the Rebbe Shalom certainly would want that the very last bits of Amalek we brought as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. Sort of, in effect, acknowledging that who's the victor? That the Rebbeinu Shalom is victorious. Yod al keis kol chomer l'Hashem v'Amalek. So you bring the korban, so you're acknowledging the Rebbeinu Shalom's role. It's not just we sent an army, no, we did this for the Rebbeinu Shalom, and therefore the last vestige of Amalek is dedicated to the Rebbeinu Shalom. We bring them, we're going to bring them as a korban on the Mizbeach, in honor of the Rebbeinu Shalom. That is the assumption, and Agag, yeah, of course I have to kill all of Amalek. But the normal manner is, when you finish the war, you bring back the king as a slave. That also is part of the victory in the war. So Shaul came, I'm coming to celebrate Hashem's victory, that's what I mean. And this is the way you celebrate. Now, when Shaul did so, lo malo shamata b'kol Hashem. So Shaul says, I definitely listened. He understood and interpreted the Dvar Hashem in a certain fashion, and it was beyond him to imagine that there could be a different understanding of the Dvar Hashem. And yet ultimately, what does Shmuel tell him? Shmuel told him that when we read our intentions into the Dvar Hashem, we are inevitably making it more superficial than it is. Because me, the finite human being, do I understand the Dvar Hashem? Could I assume that I understand Dvar Hashem to the fullest extent? Right? Shaul made a shir, he made a pshat. But ultimately, what did Shmuel tell him? The pshat fell short. Nice try, but no cigar. But the problem is, this is in real time. It wasn't in the theoretical safety of the Beis Medrash. You know, we'll have seven pshat in what the Dvar Hashem is. You know, now we're in real time. We're acting on it, and we have to act upon the Dvar Hashem. And what did you, Shaul, do? What you did was to limit, the scope of the drasha. Why? Because it was consistent with your thinking. It was consistent with your thinking. But you did not arrive at the proper conclusion. The realization that the Dvar Hashem goes beyond that which we imagine. And therefore, to be carefully attentive, to listen to the Dvar Hashem, that's another depth, that's another level. And in all of Jewish history, these are the questions that keep repeating themselves. Is how we're supposed to live together with the non-Jewish world, how to react with them, what to stand up to them, what to bow down to them. All the history is replete. But what we have to realize is that the answers are not so obvious. The obvious answer may be obviously wrong at the end of the day. So, the Megillah starts off its tale with a call for tremendous depth. Look beyond the superficial. And that's perhaps the world says that all the masquerading on Purim is also to underscore that. When you see a person in costume, so all of us realize, we're mature enough to realize that the costume is not reality. It's just a costume. And a young child may in fact not understand the difference between the two. And I think that the costume, that's why sometimes that they get a costumed individual that looks a little bit frightening. Young children become afraid. Why? Because they don't understand that this is just a show. That really there's just a regular person behind all of this. They think this is reality. So perhaps the masquerading on Purim is also, as the world says, is for this reason. The realization that a lot of what we see in this world is just a masquerade. It's a mask. The reality lies safely beyond that mask. But we have to understand we see a lot of masks. So the fact that he didn't kill the animals did not bring harm in its wake. He was the only one that was harmed by it. The fact that he didn't kill Agog, as Knesset Yisrael said, if Shaul had just listened to what the Rebbe Shaul told him to do, we would have been rid of this Agog guy. We wouldn't have this humming around either. So it had very dire consequences. No differently than the events at the beginning of the Megillah had dire consequences too. And there's a very, very telling pasuk in the Megillah. After Haman leads Mordechai around, takes him all over town on the king's horse, must have been a pretty tough day for Haman. Now, what happens at the end of the day? While Yosha of Mordechai al Shar HaMelech, he returns to the Shar HaMelech, but Haman nidchaf al beiso, ovel v'chafulosh. Haman nidchaf comes back broken to his house, ovel, mourning the chafui rosh in his head bowed. The Gemara tells us, Vayoshev Mordechai al Shar HaMelech, the implication of that is Vayoshev Mordechai means he came back to where he was. El Sako vel Taniso. He fasted the 14th, the 15th, this was the 16th of Nisan. He's leading Haman around. Well, the Haman's leading him around. So Haman is frightened by what's taking place. He's frightened by what's taking place. Mordechai is Vayoshev Mordechai al Shar HaMelech. Now we read, Chazal tell us that Haman, it's called, they're called Chachamov. That Haman's people are called Chacham. Why are they called Chacham? Because they realized a certain truth. They told him the following, that if Mordechai has any association with Shevet Yehuda, you're doomed. Why? The Mizera Yehudim Mordechai Asher Achilos Alin Polifonov L'Suchalo Ki Nafolti Polifonov. The derech is that when they fall utterly. But when they rise, once they begin to rise, they rise at Hashemayim. The star has begun to rise. If he comes, Mizera Yehuda, your goose is cooked. It's all over for you. I'll ask you a question, Rabbi Yisrael. If Chachmei Haman understood this, do we think that Mordechai understood it any less than they did? They understood Klal Yisrael better than Haman, than Mordechai? Chachmei Haman? So it's obvious that whatever they understood, Mordechai certainly, as part of the Sanhedrin, certainly understood. So if they felt defeated, this was an omen of utter defeat. And that was what played out. The next day he went by Yavhilo the obvious Haman. The next day they hustled him off to the Suda, and that's it. And Haman doesn't return. It's all over for him. All over for him. So, why did Mordechai go back al Shar HaMelech, al Saka v'al Taniso? He also saw the omen of victory. But Mordechai wasn't taken by the most obvious read. He also understood as much as Chachmei Haman did. But Mordechai also understood that the game is not over. Who says that we're Zeicha? That means it's an opportunity. But who says that we're Zeicha? Just because it's an opportunity doesn't mean we are Zeicha. Maybe we won't be Zeicha, it'll slip away. So Mordechai does not take things on the surface. The surface indicates that Haman's on the way down. And that's what his Chachmei Haman see. And they saw correctly. But Mordechai added another layer of depth. It's not Mukhruch yet. It does not yet have to be. We find the same thing, the Novi and Shoiftim by Gidon. The Novi and Shoiftim, we find that the Rabbanu Shel Olam told them, Lecho Shatas Yisrael, go save the Jews from persecution. And then the next pasuk says, first it says a malach came, then it says Hashem came. Leich b'koyich ha-chozeh v'yishatis Yisrael. So Rashi says, what's b'koyich ha-chozeh? So he says, this was the first day of Pesach. Same time of the year. It's the Haman story. And at the Seder, Gideon turns to his father and says, explain something to me. Rashi cites this. It's a chazal. Tell me, the Jews in Mitzrayim were worthy Jews or unworthy Jews in the fact that they were saved? So he says, if they were worthy Jews, the Rabbanu Shlomo should save us in their schus. And if they were unworthy Jews, and he saved them, so why are we any worse off than they are? He should save us also. It's matnas chinam. So it says, because it was melamed schus and klal Yisrael, let's leich b'koich ha-chozeh, that it was melamed schus and klal Yisrael, that chazal, that unequivocally klal Yisrael deserves to be redeemed, is v'yishat, so with this koyach, you will defeat the enemies of klal Yisrael. Now, the Rebbe Moshem came to him, sent the malach to him the day before, and he told him, leich v'yishat Yisrael. So Gideon has to get himself together and go off. So now all of a sudden the night of the Seder comes in the middle of his preparations. And Leich b'koicha chozev u'shatis Yisro, meaning if he hadn't been melamed zchus, then maybe he wouldn't have made it. So Gideon understood that opportunity knocks. But for opportunity to be realized, I have to be zeicha. And if he hadn't been melamed zchus, Klal Yisrael, he wouldn't have been zeicha. So Mordechai realized this as well. There is an omen of victory, but it's only an omen. If you look at it in the deeper sense, we're not yet assured that we're going to defeat Amon. We need tzchusim for that. What will the tzchusim be? Is Vayoshev Mordechai al Shar HaMelech al Sakha v'al Tarisa. We're still in the Rabbeinu Shalom's hands. And we still need tzchusim before the Rabbeinu Shalom, the Rabbeinu Shalom should act for us. Haman and his Chachamim, they saw what was superficially true. It wasn't yet mukhrach that it was true, but it was superficially true. And therefore, Haman is avil v'chafirosh, is broken, shattered for what is taken. And he comes home and he's shattered, and then they tell him, you're doomed. He's v'yavhilu l'hovi yasamon. He goes off in a fog to the second Suda. The difference between the initial take of things and what's truly involved in them, they're vastly, vastly different. In one of the matters, depth of the Megillah, and this is necessary throughout all the Jewish history, is we can ask ourselves, who was Achashverosh? Who was he? I don't mean what family he came from, but what was the mettle of the men? And the simple reading, if you ask most people, the simple meaning, the simple perspective of Achashverosh, he was a dupe. Well, because I'll even say he wasn't too smart. The Amala Igris Rishainas, he sent that Igris Rishainas, Leah's Kalish Sarah Vesa. In that society, it didn't make a difference whatever you were. If you were a door catcher, you were Sarah Vesa. So they asked, like, what in the world did he send such a letter for? I mean, there's no such thing. Women didn't run anything in that society. So they said, this king is something with him. You know, he's involved. That's all he has to do is send out Narishkeiten. They said that like the royal decree. Everyone has to breathe every morning. So L'moli Igris Rishainas, Klal Yisrael would have gone down. Why? Because as soon as the Tzav came from Haman, they would have acted upon it. Why wait? Why should we wait? Haman told us to wait until next year Adar. It's now this. Why should we wait? What are we waiting for? There's a reason like demon. So that's a perspective on Achashverosh. But Chazal offered a different perspective. That he was chuburish osa mitchilosa batsayifri. He was evil through and through. Chazal tell us in a telling exchange in the Megillah, Haman comes and he offers to pay for the schus to murder the Jews. Aseres halofim ki karkesef, not a bad payoff. What's Achashverosh's response? Hakesef nasun loch. You don't have to pay me for this one. So Chazal tell us that what was the meaning? The meaning was, this is actually, the marshal that Chazal gave is a story which actually happened in Tel Yeshiva in Cleveland. There was a guy that had a huge ditch on his property. And he had a neighbor who had a huge mound of earth. So they met up with each other. So Rabalachar, the guy with the ditch, offers to pay the guy for his earth. He says, pay you? I'm glad to get rid of it. Just let me get over there and dump it in. So that was Achashverosh's response. It tells Yeshiva what happened. They had a huge ditch, and the state was making a highway, And they had dirt they had to get rid of. So they came to the yeshiva and they paid them to dump off the earth. So they filled in the whole ditch. They actually collected on it. So Chazal tell us that Achashverosh was no less enthusiastic than Haman was in this mitzvah. So-called mitzvah, as they called it. So Chazal, what is Esther? Chazal tell us when he asked her, who was this Miuzev Eiza, who, what was Esther's response? Her response was to point at him. Right? More than Malach Gavriel and pushed her hand in a different direction. But who's the enemy of the Jewish people? The ultimate enemy of the Jewish people is Achashverosh. But Achashverosh in the Megillah is a masked man. He's portrayed as a bumbling incompetent. But the reality is he was not bumbling and he wasn't incompetent. He was a very devious and sinister figure. So, Parsha Zohar is a call to observe the events in Klal Yisrael with tremendous depth. Don't assume that our first take has arrived at the answer, the truth. Shaul had his first take on what the Dvar Hashem would be. And he grievously missed the mark. Klal Yisrael had its take on what was appropriate in dealing with Achashverosh and in dealing with Haman. And twice over they missed it. With dire consequences. Parsha Zohar is to remind us things are not so simple. The world is complex. The world is to be examined carefully before we decide what's the appropriate avenue through which to serve the Rabbi Hashalat. Even a Rabbi Yisai. Thank you.